Welcome to the Organize 365 Podcast Special Teacher Podcast Edition. In this podcast series, you'll meet Jamie, the principal of Lawrenceburg Middle School, and learn how she got herself organized and all about implementing the Organize 365 Teacher Workbox in her whole building in the first Organize 365 pilot program. Jamie and I explore school organization from superintendents all the way down to teachers and personal organization. We talked through what didn't work, what we would have done differently, and how other buildings and districts can embrace the teacher workbox. So now listen in to my next conversation with Jamie. All right, Jamie, welcome back again.
Hi, everyone.
All right. In this podcast and in the next, I'm going to go through the two additional meetings that we had for special ed in order to support them in implementing the teacher workbox. Now, I have to say, I'm a teacher. I teach about organization and productivity. I want to teach all the students. So I could find a way that the teacher workbox works for every single person in academia from preschool all the way through a PhD program, because I think it externalizes the working memory and the executive function tasks, which gives us more time. Like, I can make that case. Any teacher who loves what they're doing can make the case that what they are teaching, everybody should want to learn and know. I am also a business owner. I understand finances, and I am somewhat of a realist. And I understand that not every teacher in America is going to end up with a teacher workbox paid for by their district or the state. I mean, maybe, but probably not. So with that understanding, it was at this point that I realized, okay, Lisa, lovely that you want to do a pilot with the whole school. Great that the Lawrenceburg school system has allowed you the privilege and the opportunity to do this. But in reality, who is going to benefit the most from a teacher workbox? And, you know, what teachers do you support the most with this product? And it quickly became apparent that the special ed department was going to need additional training, and that if we could get the special education department teacher workboxes working, it would benefit the entire school and the entire school district. Secondarily, new teachers in their first and second year, they also needed the teacher workbox, because that teacher workbox would acclimate them faster to the district or the corporation that they were in and the building they were in and the invisibleness of being in this community versus just teaching as a whole. And just so happened in this education department, we had both of those on top of each other. So I reached out to Jamie, I think the same day. I was like, that went great. Now, can I have more of your teacher's time? And you were like, sure. So the first thing I thought was, you know, even though the school is only 30 minutes from me, I do have a full late. And also I'm getting my PhD. So I have a lot of things I'm doing. I said, let's try something with Zoom. Like, let's just get everybody on Zoom for like 45 minutes. And I need to see how many holes are in this process to begin with, just based on my recollection of how I did IEPs as a teacher 12 years ago in Ohio. So there's differences between IEPs in Ohio and Indiana. Also, I was doing it from the teacher standpoint, not from the special ed educator standpoint. I needed to get some more information. And then we also were having a in-person paper organizing retreat in Cincinnati, again, just 30 minutes away at our headquarters. And so I said to Jamie, and then in addition, any of your special educators that want to come to the paper organizing retreat for free, they can come, and then we'll have them here in the building and I can really spend some time with them, and they can bring their boxes and we can kind of get some hands-on workshop going. And you said yes to both. So
I don't think you're the word yes, Lisa.
Kind of the same. So when you went back to the special educators and you said, okay, Lisa wants to do the Zoom day and she's also doing this thing in Cincinnati, what'd they say to that?
So I think they were overwhelmed in general, right? So they were excited. I think the Zoom call turned into a lot more of a, they listed pretty much everything that they didn't even know that they had, because there was,
right.
We had, going back to what you said earlier in one of the previous podcasts, we had a digital folder with all kinds of checklists and all that. But they were so overwhelmed, they hadn't even clicked into it to find out what was there. So they were excited to get time with each other. I just got there. We have instructional assistants. We did it at the end of the day when two of them already had prep period. And then we just got the rest of them covered by using the instructional assistants that were already in their rooms. So I think that, you know, for principals, getting the staff the time, hopefully as much as possible during their normal time, you know, freeing them up. You know, one thing I do sometimes I don't know about everybody else. If you don't have this problem, please reach out, because I would love to know how you don't have a problem with subs right now of getting them. So one thing we do a lot with subs is I'm the sub and I bring them into the cafeteria and I work in my stuff and the kids work on their digital stuff. And so that's a way I'm lucky I have the cafeteria is right next to this other commons area. So like I could put my teachers over there and they could monitor the children to make sure they're not like, you know, hurting each other or anything. But, and I realized too, I'm at a middle school. You can't do that with kindergartners.
Right.
You give kindergartners 5 seconds, they're climbing all over each other. So I think the time and then them being feeling like nobody's judging them, like just come with the problem so that we can address them.
Yes, right. And the paper organizing retreat was on a Saturday, so it wasn't a school day. So they gave up their weekend morning because they just stayed the morning of that event. So I'm going to take it back to, I'm going to keep taking my stories back to the house because I think we can all understand it at the house level. And then we move it back into school. Like we put on our, which part of the teacher, principal, superintendent hat, I want to take it back to the household. So when I was doing in-home organizing in Cincinnati, year 4, year 5, year 6, I wasn't doing any of the in-home organizing anymore. And we started organizing these houses top to bottom. And I realized when I would go into different houses and I would give the estimates, and eventually I could just give the estimate over the phone. If you do enough, you know. The expectation of the homeowner was that it would be like a TV show. And that if you came in and you organized their house, like literally everything would be labeled and, you know, in acrylic containers and all of that. And so I started to manage the expectations of the homeowner by letting them know how much everything cost. I was like, okay, we can organize all of the physical things in your home, not including paper, not including photos, for, it was usually like $5,000 for the house. Then we could do, photos could range from $5,000 to $10,000 to put those in albums. That's how much that costs. And paper would be $2,000 to $5,000 also, because every single piece of paper needs to be touched, but we would take that out of the house and not do it inside of the house. And that was at $75 an hour pricing. So that was the pricing that we were using. So for $5,000 to organize your entire house, that would include your garage and storage room. You know, paper would be put into boxes, but not sorted. Photos would be put into boxes, but not sorted. I said, if you would like all of those containers to be labeled, double the price. And they were like, what? And I was like, yes. And I realized this when I was organizing a storage room. Like I'm a jigsaw puzzler. Like I could walk through your house. I'll tell you exactly how long it's going to take my team to organize that house. We don't do this anymore, by the way. But I would go in a storage room and I just generally look around. I'm like, okay, this is a whatever, a 4 or 6 hour job. And then the homeowner said, I want everything labeled. I'm like, oh yeah, no big deal. How long could that possibly take? It took us 3 hours to label everything. And we didn't even do it with like the cute Cricut. We just did it with like a label maker. She's like, that's not what I wanted. I was like, oh, if you want it to look like TV, it's going to take twice as long and cost twice as much. So I say that because while I have never been a special educator, I am an organizer. And you could drop me anywhere. It could be like a TV show. Drop me anywhere and see if I can organize that space and those people and that the invisible work. I'll be able to do it. And I knew, based on the fact that these were new teachers, so they were new to the district or new to the building or new to teaching entirely. That's a whole bunch of invisible work. Special education in and of itself, huge amount of invisible work. The quantity of children that are qualified for IEPs in this building, astronomical, and the caseload for these teachers, double that I see in Ohio. So caseloads for teachers for special education is state dependent. In the state of Ohio, we have a much different ratio than in Indiana. So just knowing the volume of pupils per teacher, the experience level of the teacher, and the newness to that specific building, I was like, these are three levels of complexity in arguably the most important and the most information-laden position inside of the building. Special education is the most information laden because it touches everyone. It touches a pupil, touches a teacher, touches the assistant principal, it touches the district, it touches the resources outside of the building. So I needed the Zoom call to understand. I already knew a lot of the variables, but I needed to know how many more variables were there in Indiana that I didn't know about because it wasn't Ohio, and how much of this invisibleness had the actual existing teachers found. So it was really just a Q&A. Like when we got on the Zoom, I was just trying to ascertain how much stuff do I need to have when they come here over to the office. What did you think we were going to do on the Zoom meeting, or what were your expectations?
I don't know that I really had it. I think same thing. I wanted it to be where we could come into the paper retreat portion planned out. I think there were two parts that like immediately I was like, what? Like we gave you that. Like, you know, like, what do you mean? Like when they had told you there was no checklist, I'm like, you have an entire digital file of checklists. Like,
yes.
But then I thought, I don't know that I was able to, I had never used all those checklists. So I assumed that the person from above us with special ed had shown them. They hadn't. And so like, I was just like, oh, okay. Well, so of course then I'm feeling bad, right? Like that I'm like, you have these resources and you didn't even know you had these resources. But then I also found out that within that checklist, there was like three checklists for the same thing. Some of them were outdated, you know? And so mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like we have got to get you guys a checklist. And then what you mentioned a second ago was them not noticing. Yeah. So there was one that I heard them say to you, like, oh yeah, we feel prepared for the meetings. And I was like, I keep having to get up and go get things.
Yes.
And like, and they're like, oh yeah, I guess that means we're not prepared. And it wasn't like judging them. It was just like, hey,
no judgment. This is no judgment.
Yeah. You should not have to get up and leave a meeting if you're prepared for the meeting. So like, we got to figure out how to make sure we're prepared.
So IEPs, individualized education plans, I'm going to go through my understanding of them at a kindergarten level. My kids have both qualified for IEP meetings. So what happens is you notice that there's something not typical, that there is a deviation from normal for a student that is enough to warrant the fact that, you know what, this student may need some individualized instruction because they are that far deviated from the rest of the classroom. Parent can bring that up, a teacher can bring that up, whatever. The issue is arisen. Then there is a meeting. And in that meeting, the parents and the school sit together and they go, you know, we're thinking that maybe there's an issue. Like, okay, well, maybe there is an issue. We're going to do a full education evaluation. So a full education evaluation means the parent is going to do some things with their children. The school is going to do some things with that student. Check the eyes, check the ears, do, you know, like all these different things. There's this whole list. I think there are like 21 things on this list. And in that meeting, you go through every single thing and the parent and the school say, do we need to check this or has this been checked recently? Can we get this information from somewhere else? Who is going to provide this information? And this is done in a fairly short amount of time. I believe it's done within 6 weeks from the time of that meeting to the time of we're all going to meet back around this table with all this data from all these different people, sometimes a pediatrician, psychologist, whatever. So we come back around the table and then a determination is made based on the data collected. Do we feel collectively, the parent and the school together, that this child would be supported or is in need of an individualized education plan? Is that your understanding of how that happens too, Jamie?
Okay. Pretty much. It's it all depends on who makes the request on the timeline. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. And that, I believe, is a federal thing.
Yes.
Okay. So that is not state level. Yeah. Correct. This is, yes. So this is federal. So that's why it's all kind of pretty spelled out how this happens. Now, when my kids went to a Montessori school, then public school, then private school, then Catholic school, I told you, we used hashtag all the resources. Also, during the time that my children were in school, the way in which the state of Ohio qualified students for IEPs and then serviced IEPs changed. So while this needs to happen in this order, because my kids' private school was not in the same district as the district in which I live, there was a change. Initially, the child was evaluated based on the public school where you lived, whether or not that's where the school they attended was. And then the IEP was serviced by that public school where they lived. Now in the state of Ohio, I believe it is that the child is evaluated and served by the district in which where the school they attend is. So the school my kids attended was within the Cincinnati Public School System. It was Springer School and Center for Learning Disabilities. So the Cincinnati Public School System actually did the evaluation and the implementation of that IEP because that's where the school that they were attending resides. So sometimes there's a difference in which school district does it. That's in Ohio. So that was my understanding coming into this meeting. In your school district, your organization in Indiana, all of those tests in Ohio are done at the building level, but that's not how it's done in Indiana, correct?
Correct.
So how's it done in Indiana?
Well, it kind of depends on the corporation, but most corporations, they've come together and they've got an organization that does all the testing and then they come in. Ours is mainly Dearborn County, Ripley County. Ours stands for Rod, Ripley, Ohio, Dearborn. The school corporations do not have to be a part of that. If they don't, then they, yes, they have to have somebody at the corporation level to do that stuff, but it's still not at the building level. So there's still not, there's not a school psychologist at each building doing testing and that type of thing. So ours, we have a cooperative that does it for our whole area. So and the we reason have to why also do things in correlation with them.
Yes. And that is the reason why I am taking the time out to explain this, because when it comes to special education at the federal level and at the state level, and why I say it's the most important to get this organized inside of your building is because you can immediately see how inside of this building, up until this point, we're talking about teachers that deal with an assistant principal who takes care of their teachers and students in the building. And then the principal is the one that's going in and out of the building. At the special education level, you're immediately in and out of the building in so many different ways. In mm-hmm. the district of residence of the student, in the district of residence of the school. And anyways, so you can see how there's already a lot of complexity. And it's legal. Like everything you're doing here is legal. The timeline is legal. The tests, the data, the qualifying, all of these things, there's just a different level. Like obviously your schools are being held to account for scores on testing, but that's once or twice a year, maybe. This is day in, day out. Every single child needs to be identified and qualified within a certain amount of time. And then once they qualify for an IEP, that IEP, you have a meeting every single year, and then they have to be re-qualified every 3 years. So there's a lot of timelines, there's a lot of data, there's a lot of testing, there's a lot of reporting. And this is before we even make the individualized education plan. Remember, if you qualify, now you've got to make an individualized education plan that is testable for each child. And then you need to keep up all of the data and the records to make sure that this is on task. It is an extremely data heavy, lot of organizational pieces to it. Mm-hmm. And this is why I knew that in addition to being new teachers, in addition to being new to the building, now you're going to step into a district that has a large caseload of students with this complexity. And I did not realize that all of this testing was happening outside the building, which was great. That meant that these teachers didn't need to do that. But also there's a complexity then because you need to communicate to this outside entity and back as well. So my question was, how many checklists do you have for this process? To which, Jamie, you said they said none. And you said, no, wait, we have checklists, but they're not using the checklist. And that's really what we set out to do, was create a checklist. Because otherwise, back to our original conversation, all of these teachers are doing this all in isolation, not together. And for each individual student they have, which is in a lot of students, and for the evaluation and the IEP meeting, and then you had 504s in there. I mean, it's just like, you could spend your whole entire life with paperwork. Did I do this for that one? Did I do this for this one? Oh, I missed step 7 because I didn't even know there was a step 7.
Mm-hmm. And I think I came at this too. I guess I never really shared this before. Before all of those people had left, I have always been surrounded by a very strong special ed department. So it was not something that I had to know a whole lot about because they were always very good at it. And so all of a sudden, I have a new department and I'm enough to be dangerous. I'm good enough to be dangerous. Like too. at one point there was a meeting that I had with our cooperative, and they finally looked at me at one point and they said, "Jamie, you know this. Why do you act like you don't know this?" But I was like, "I don't know, because I do." But I think I felt like so overwhelmed that I now had to disseminate this. So as a teacher, you feel very confident when you know something and you're disseminating it. Like, I got confidence for days if I'm talking about the periodic table. But even within your content, like Newton's laws of motion, struggle. So I didn't have the confidence. So I had knowledge, but not confidence. I had knowledge of IEPs. I didn't have the confidence. And all of the checklists that were in there, the lady who had left, she transferred to a different position within our corporation. So she didn't try and leave them high and dry. But she had checklists, but it was like those, they weren't either, they were A, because she was a type A like me. So they were either so long that the teachers were like, whoa, or they were so like, you had to kind of know what she was thinking. So we had to then take those checklists and create one that made sense to them.
Yep.
And that was a big thing.
There's no like, oh, just give us your magic checklist, Lisa, because I did provide you guys with checklists. You pulled off your checklist. There is no easy button. You must go through the analog process of organizing to increase productivity.
100%. Yes.
And you have to do it for your productivity. No one can give it to you. So you can have checklists, but checklists, I don't like checklists that are too long because I will not read them. And I don't like checklists that are too short. You have to take it and internalize it to yourself. You have to use it a couple of times and figure out what's going to be good for you. So the reason I even know about these checklists at all is because I've sat on both sides of the table. As a teacher, when you're in an IEP meeting and the question is asked of you in an IEP meeting and you say, "I'll have to go get that information," and you don't have it there, then it's almost as if you never even did it. And then everything else you say is pulled into question after that. As a parent going into an IEP meeting, if you have to go get information somewhere else, again, that information doesn't exist. You're just an annoying parent that wants more for your child than your child deserves, and you should have known. So I learned very quickly that if I was going to be the parent or the teacher in that meeting, I was going to have every single thing that I needed for that meeting so that if any question came up, I was able to produce that piece of paper. So inside of Organize 365, the Warrior Mama Binder is created for parents to have all of that information at their fingertips in those meetings. In this instance, I was trying to create that for those teachers because these meetings are extremely emotionally volatile. Nobody's walking in there with a cup of coffee going, "Oh, I'm just having an IEP meeting and then I'm going to get my hair done." No, like everybody has an agenda, high dollars. It's not an easy breezy conversation. I don't care if you go into an IEP meeting to find out if your child is going to qualify. Once you find out they do qualify, you're crushed. Like, you're like, "I know there's something wrong." You have to find out what's wrong. When they find out what's wrong, and then you're like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe there's something wrong." Like, you're just like distraught and you leave in tears, and all day long, you're like, "Could I have fixed this? And what am I doing wrong as a parent?" And like, you're beating yourself up. Like, these are really hard conversations. And so I know that these teachers that I'm meeting with are having dozens of these per year, like so many of these meetings. You as the teacher going into that meeting, you as the assistant principal knowing what the school has available to offer, you as a parent going in trying to find out what your child needs or how they could better be supported, you all have the best interests of the child at heart. There's not a single person in that room that is trying to save money or not meet a child's expectations. But if you don't have the paperwork and you don't have the information to support your part of the argument, you are written off as if you are unorganized, uninterested, unknowledgeable. And that is where the checklists and the information and the support allow a hard, necessary conversation to be easier and more productive. And that's really all I'm trying to provide.
Right. And I think too, going back to two of the big aha moments that came out of that meeting that you and I were like, okay, we can address those, right? Like, these are things, some of this bigger than us, We can't help caseload sizes. We can't help the needs that the kids come to us with, but what can we help? One of those big things is I don't care what a special ed teacher is doing. They are traveling. They are traveling to places with meetings. They are in a variety of classrooms many times if they're inclusion. They are traveling and they are trying to go into and out of meetings. And that was where we ultimately got them the portable work boxes. And then each of them had a little different problem.
Yeah.
Some of them, the paperwork wasn't a problem, but preparing for it. So we had to address that with each one a little bit individually, but by addressing each one individually, we were able to help them all. But knowing that some people were better at some things than others, and how did we get that information from that person and how did we improve others? And I think we'll go into that in the next one with one of the big aha moments when we got to the paper retreat. So.
Yeah. So I think what came out of the first Zoom meeting was, yes, this was a problem. Glad we noticed it. Glad we were going to fix it very quickly. I do believe it was just a couple of teachers and yourself that really took on all of the different checklists there were. I believe you really took charge of that. And we're like, we're going to create a checklist. And then once you guys, then you got buy-in and then you just started Xeroxing the checklist. So you really took on ownership of getting the correct checklist for your teachers that you're building at this point. How did you go about doing that?
Well, I printed out the copies of what everybody wanted, or like the one that you shared, the ones that were in the folder that I had shared with them. And then I had another friend of mine that works in another state completely. And what we did was we literally just went through and said, is this something we use in Indiana? And we would put it on we put it in one massive list of everything you could possibly do for an IEP. And then we said, is this something you do before? Mm-hmm. Is this something you do during? Or is this something you do after? And then we started plotting them across. And then we built in, I think it was 5 each for them to be like, okay, we thought we knew everything, but we forgot about this. So then they had, so the checklist was on, we got it on one piece of paper. So we had to shorten them. But we had a column for before, like preparing for the meeting, during the meeting, after the meeting, and each of them had a task set with a checkbox in front of it so that they knew that they had come in with it. And then, like I said, each one had 5 spots underneath where they could be like, oh, we forgot to add this. And then we've edited it and sent it back out. So like, for example, one of the things that we kept having to leave for, their keys do not work on the file room. So they don't, because it's a legal area. And so they would have to come and get our keys to open the file room. So we had to discuss like, how do you get the files? Or if it's a kiddo that, you know, has been on an IEP for a while and you don't need to go back and see everything, you just need their most updated ones. There's a digital way of getting that. So teaching them those different ways of checking it off and saying like, did you do this? Did you do this? And we had a date on there so that they knew when everything needed to be done by, because once you have the meeting, you have to finalize it within a certain number of days. And if you don't have the meeting within a year, you're out of compliance. So there's a lot of just stress, especially like you said, they're new to the district. They're new to the building. They're new to, all of them were new to special ed. So it was, and each of them did it a little different, like, and that's okay. Like understanding that, that like whatever works for you, like make that work for you. And then they all got, like, I had the main version, but then they could have an editable version. So like if they wanted them in a certain order that made sense for them, so be it. So they had the digital version.
And if you think about time,
I was just better at Excel. So that's why.
Yes.
I'm the one that can manipulate things quickly. So
if you think about the time, the money, and the resources in special education in your building, where I believe a third of the kids qualify. Like, this is a significant amount of your budget. So the amount of time that you took to get a better checklist. Number one, from here on out, you have the master checklist. You have solved this problem for you as a principal for the rest of the time you're a principal in this building. So that is a permanently solved problem for you. At the teacher level, the special education teacher level, they have a master, which they've been able to modify. and fits on one page. I want to say that's important because I, as a teacher, would say if I have 30 kids, I would make 30 copies and I would put one in each of their slosh pockets because I at all times need to know where I am checking off on this. You also, as a teacher, could have a spreadsheet where you have like 30 tabs on the bottom with each person's name and you're like digitally checking it. If you're physically tracking it on a piece of paper or digitally checking it on a Excel spreadsheet, it doesn't matter. That is personal preference of if you want digital or if you want paper. The benefit of paper is when you're in the meeting, that checklist is right in front of you and you see right where you're checking. Like you can literally be checking things off as you're going through the meeting. Also, you don't have to have a computer on, you don't have to have a battery, and you don't get distracted by everything else that's on a computer. So I like it printed out because I like to sit on my bed and spread all my slash buckets out and grab all of my students every weekend is what I would do. And I would scan those lists for every single one to make sure I'm on track. But I am a paper pencil person. It can be done digitally. It's not digital or paper. It's which way do you want to do it? But it has to be created collaboratively in analog, and then it can be optimized in digital.
Yes. And they all printed them out. But another thing was there are certain papers that like you have to offer the parents the notice of parent rights at every meeting. Well, what was happening, and nobody really said anything until this meeting, was we had a good stash of all of that in this one conference room, but they weren't always in that conference room for their meetings. So that's where that portable Sunday basket came in, was they wanted to be able to take all of that stuff that we had in one place and have it portable, because realistically they could be in one of four rooms. And originally I said, well, I'll just create one of those. I'll just create a station in every one of the rooms. And they're like, yeah. And then you'll throw us into this other meeting room. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So we just went and bought the portable baskets. We also bought, I made the investment of buying the number of special ed kids. We bought a red slash pocket for every student. That will come back to play later.
All right. And that's going to be our next episode. Thank you.
No problem.
Organization is a learned skill that is taught. Teachers teach. Districts need to teach and support teachers in the additional administrative roles in education. The Teacher Workbox is a comprehensive system that does just that. First, the Teacher Workbox has a complete online course that makes visible all the invisible roles in education. And it also includes the school supplies of a physical box, 40 slash pockets, and a workbook. Additionally, the annual teacher camp in July is included in this course, in which teachers will build their box for the first time or rebuild their box each summer for the next school year. They'll set up their systems, and they'll be part of a positive online teacher community of other teachers doing the same. Then throughout the school year, from Labor Day to Memorial Day, with a four-week break in December, there will be weekly accountability groups in our teacher club from 8 to 9:30 Eastern on Thursday nights. Don't worry, if people can't attend live, there's always a replay. And this is a lifetime membership. Just like everything we learn in college when we're getting our teaching degree, the learning that comes with the Teacher Workbox will stick with teachers for the duration of their teaching career. And they will have access to the summer camp and the weekly accountability for the duration of their teaching career. That's right. One enrollment, lifetime access. Organize 365 supports teachers so they can teach and support students. We would love to partner with you in the Teacher Workbox and getting that going in your school, in your grade level, or in your district. Go ahead and email customerservice@organize365.com if you have any more questions or if you want directions on how to place a purchase order.